All right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Line Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Sam, it's just after the close here, December 29th, last business day of 2023. Can't believe 2024 will be here just around the corner now.
Yep, can't wait to wipe this slate clean and start with a clean slate on 2024.
Yeah, but you say that, but as we were discussing, as we were putting the show together here, that actually, from a performance perspective, 2023 wasn't actually too bad. Could have been a lot worse, let's say.
That's true. It's pretty good for those that held both stocks and bonds in their portfolio, which I assume most listeners are.
Well, why don't we just cut right to the chase and go with the market recap and where are we for the year?
All right. Sounds good. So looking at starting with the S&P 500, the S&P 500 ended the year at 26% positive return. Very strong quarter, just over 11% on the quarter to date total return for the S&P 500 month to date, up 4.5%, and a strong week as well, up 34 basis points. And just looking at the chart here, it doesn't look like the S&P 500 ever ticked negative for 2023. If so, it was just for a brief moment or so around the regional banking crisis that occurred in March. That we talked about a couple times here on, and you know, in terms of the topic of the week, as well as just based on weekly events that we saw here on M3.
I have the low of the year was on January 5th.
Okay.
And the high of the year was yesterday.
All right. So there we have it. There sounds pretty strong in terms of the total return for the S&P 500. Then, so hopefully people were well invested in U.S. equities, but it wasn't just contained to the S&P 500 as a broader index. We'll get to the small and growth and value indices as well. But keeping it within the S&P 500 sectors here for now, looks like two sectors here, technology and comm services, both ended the year over 50%. The big winner, however, was the technology sector, ending the year with a print of plus 56% on the year-to-date basis there. For comm services, that ended up at 53% positive return for the year to date. If we take a look at that, though, it's kind of the big winners this year were the big losers last year. I saw that tech was down almost 30% in 2022, and comm services was down nearly 40% during that same period. So just a reversal of and then some for those years there, at least for technology there. And then when we take a look at the losers this year, across the board here, looks like utilities led the way down 7% for the year for 2023. And then when we take a look at energy and consumer staples, those both had a negative print in front of them. Energy down 60 basis points and consumer staples down 80 basis points there. So three sectors in the red, eight in the green, putting up the S&P 500. Up again over 26% for the year to date. A lot of that being driven by the so-called Magnificent Seven that were contained in those top two sectors, along with consumer discretionary, which, you know, not too shabby, and ended with a 40% positive return for 2023. Now moving over to the Russell 1000 for the small caps, that ended up with the large caps that ended up with a return similar to the S&P 500. That was up 26% as well. And let's see, the Russell 2000 rather, is up 17% for the year. Moving on to growth versus value, growth was up, the Russell 1000 growth was up 43% for the year, and Russell 1000 up 11.5%. And then looking at it here, it was a little bit weaker today, that kind of put it down, but regional banks there for the intraday as of this morning, as measured by the KRX index there, was actually positive on a year-to-date basis due to this very strong quarter-to-date return that it had at 26% positive return in the fourth quarter of 2023. But it is ending the year down 40 basis points for 2023. But that's pretty much a round trip, I'll call, because that was down over 30% when we take a look at it through the month of May of this year. So quite the roller coaster ride there for regional bank index there. Moving over to fixed income, starting with treasuries, if we want to talk about roller coasters here, on the 2-year treasury note that ended with a yield of 4.25%. That's 18 basis points lower than it ended 2022. For the 10-year note, it was exactly flat, having a closing yield today of, 3.88%, same as it was on December 30th, 2022. But a lot of vol in between there. I saw that you put some highs and lows there as well within the 10-year there. But the 10-year looks like it hit a low of 3.31 on April 6th and got as high as 4.99. Couldn't get to 5, I think, even with the round, right, Jeff, on as a high on October 19th. But here we are at 3.88, same as where we started or ended, sorry, 2022.
Yeah, never got above 5 on a closing. Intraday got like 5.03 or something, but closing 4.99, didn't even get to 5 on the round.
That's right. So, and then looking at the bond, the 30-year Treasury bond ended with a yield that was 6 basis points higher than last year at 4.03%. What all this meant here for the broad U.S. bond aggregate here, the Barclays U.S. bond aggregate closed the year with a return of about 5.5%. A lot of that coming from the starting yield and some of it coming from the duration there. But on the quarter to date, most of that that return was won back in the last quarter here, up 6.8% on the fourth quarter of 2023. Leading the way really for the year to date was the down in quality type of bonds here, with bank loans up 12.5%, high yield index up about 11.5%. Emerging markets in the sovereign space was up almost 11% at 10.6 positive performance, 9.7% of that coming in the fourth quarter here. IG corporate credit here for the U.S., not too shabby as well, up about 9.5%, about 10% of that coming in the fourth quarter here. Agency mortgage-backed securities up 5%, and U.S. Treasuries up 4% for the year. So not a bad place for your traditional 60-40 allocators in terms of portfolios. If those are counting, that's really makes up a lot for what we saw back in 2022.
Yeah, and when we were going into this year, I know we were talking a lot about earn the carry. You know, yields are, well, we were like, yields are flat, but we were like, yields are higher than they've been in a long time. Earn that carry. You know, this is the time to earn carry in fixed income, and that certainly panned out as long as you did the what we affectionately call the Rip Van Winkle portfolio, where you just invest and then sleep for the year. You're like, oh, nothing happened. Rates were unched.
Yeah. Fortunately, in this case, and unfortunately, I suppose, none of us slept for the year, I think. If so, you know, it was a long respite, I suppose. But one other thing before we close out the fixed income sector here, one area that we've talked about a lot this year was the inversion of the yield curve. The curve slightly de-inverted from where it started, where it started the year. It's 18 basis points less inverted. Right now, it is inverted by 37 basis points December 29th, 2023. It got as low as inverted as about 110 basis points there. So really some moves there within the yield curve. And then moving over to commodities here, commodities starts us off with the negative prints within the cohort that we look at on the broad index basis, but starts and ends, I should say. The Bloomberg Commodity Index on an invested basis was down about 8% on a year-to-date basis here. But taking a look at it from the complex by commodity types, the precious metal sector was the big and only winner in terms of having a positive return. That was up almost 10%. For 2023. On the flip side there, we had energy bringing up the rear, down 20% on a year-over-year basis, and industrial metals down, looks like 9% for the year, and agriculture commodities down about 4% for 2023. In terms of just looking at front-month contracts here, WTI crude oil futures started the year with an 80 handle. Looks like it was able to maintain the 70 handle here. It did dip below for a few trading days here in 2023, but right now it's at it closed at 71.33 per barrel of WTI crude oil on the front month futures. And similarly for gold futures, there it closed above 2,000. That's up over 13.5% on the year on the price basis, and that right now it's at $2,072 a troy ounce of gold.
And that's a good point, Sam. I was going to say that crude oil total return, so if you rolled the contracts, was up or was down 2%. And so contrast that with the down 21% on energy. It shows you how bad Nat Gas did on the year. And then gold actually, given you know the contango in the gold curve, it's actually 12.82%. So you know the cost of carry there on gold wasn't too bad, but still negative.
Yeah, a little bit of drag there, but I think that 13, you know, let's just say on a you know on the all-in basis, still up in the low double digits there is still a nice little return there for gold, and people are expecting it to perhaps rally a little bit more in 2024, assuming that the Fed embarks on their rate cutting path there. But we'll take a look. As we know, gold does wear a number of hats there, sometimes flight to safety as well. So we'll take a look and see how gold performs in 2024. But just to round out the 2023, your favorite asset class with Bitcoin, they're up over 150% year to date. It ended last year with a 16,000 handle. Now it's at 42,000 and some change for Bitcoin there. So quite a year to date performance, and it was pretty much strong, you know, for most of the year there. So a little bit of quite a bit of a clawback, I suppose you say there for Bitcoin.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that wrap up of 2023 in the markets, do you want to kick us off on what happened over the last 2 weeks in the macro front? It was a pretty light week, I think we talked about, but kind of perhaps heavy in magnitude potentially from some of the data points that we got.
Yeah, it was pretty light. We had the GDP number came out on because we got 2 weeks on the 21st. Came in actually 4.9% down from the 5.2 estimate. Jobless claims came out also on that same day. Came in a little bit weaker than or stronger than expected, so lower numbers. So 205,000 for initial claims, 1.865 million for continuing claims. The so-called leading index came out at negative 0.5, right on the estimate there. And then we got personal income and personal spending. Personal income at 0.4%, right on the nose. Personal spending at 0.2%, expected to be 0.3, so a little bit more, a little bit less spending there from that that indicator. And then the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. If you remember Jay Powell, it was interesting. Jay Powell in his speech basically said that the Fed expects that core PCE or headline PCE, I guess, to come in at 2.6% at the end of the month. Well, then if you go and look at what the economists' estimates were, they estimated 2.8. But guess what? The Fed was right on the nose there, 2.6. So actually didn't move markets too much from that side of things. The month-over-month PCE headline was a negative 0.1%. So it was deflation there. It was expected to be 0.0. Core PCE up 0.1, expected to be 0.2, so better number there. And that brought the core PCE deflator. So that's the Fed's preferred inflation gauge. They want this to get to 2%. It's actually a 3.2%, down from a 3.3 expectation, 3.4 the prior month. So kind of the right trend there. I guess enough of a trend for the Fed to start thinking about it. Thinking that they're good to go and not really have to worry about raising rates any further. This week was really light. On Tuesday, we got the home price index. So the S&P CoreLogic, Case-Shiller 20 city home price index. The 20 city month over month was up 0.64%, was estimated to be 0.6. So a little bit stronger there. That brought the year over year number to 4.87%. It was estimated to be 5. So kind of right there in line there. And really, that's it. We did get the jobless claims again yesterday. The initial claims was 218,000, so just slightly above the estimate of 210. And the continuing claims came in right on the nose at 1.875 million in the week. So really, pretty much a quiet week here. It really felt that way in markets and kind of the goings on there at the the goings on in the market. We look at the Fed. The Fed funds futures. Right now, we're looking at a 14% chance of a cut in January, so a pretty minimal probability of a Fed rate cut. We have an 83% chance, or additional 83% chance of a cut on March 20th, pricing in 6 cuts for 2024. Remember, the Fed has 8 meetings. If January is a no-go, that means there's 7 meetings for 6 rate cuts, if assuming the Fed just cuts 25 every meeting. And that looks like their market's pricing in 5 consecutive rate cuts from March to September. And then the November, December is kind of a 50-50 between each of those for the last rate cut of the year. So it should be an interesting time. We'll have to see whether the inflation numbers pan out and whether the Fed really goes along with what the market's pricing in there from a Fed rate cut perspective.
Yeah, and then you know, for basically for listeners that have been following us, perhaps some new people that joined on more recently, but and also those that have been with us for a while, you know, we thought it'd be good to give a little bit of a refresher of some of the more topical topics of the weeks that we hit in 2023. But we really, you know, kicked it out strong, I think, on episode 97 on January 6th. We did an episode where we talked about the inversion of the yield curve, specifically around the 3-month and the 10-year, which is a signal that Campbell Harvey had come up with, and basically just said that when that portion of the curve starts to invert under certain conditions, that was indicative of a potential recession that was coming around. And in that episode, I remember that it was basically we read an article that came out that said this time is different. You know, it was the man himself that actually came out and said that perhaps this time around, the inversion of the 3-month and 10-year could be different for a number of reasons, and we found that topical as well as interesting to hear him actually provide his reasons for that. So if people wanted to check out that episode that aired on, or that was recorded on January 6th.
The 3-month 10-year was negative 53 basis points at the end of last year. It's negative 148 this right now.
Yeah, it keeps on trucking there.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting take there from Mr. Harvey on his own indicator there and why it might be different this time. But a lot of it did play out. I remember he was talking about the strength of perhaps the labor market and then forward-looking views on inflation as far as it coming down in a pretty short period of time is part of the reasons why he thought that it could be different around this time. So some of that has definitely played out. And he also did mention about how perhaps the consumers were in a stronger footing this time around during the inversion that they had in past inversions. But up until, we'll see. I mean, it's not calling it, this time is different already, but in the previous 8 recessions, it has a track record of calling 8 for 8. So we'll see how this time plays out. And then on March 10th, episode 106, we talked about bank runs around starting with the Silvergate, or was it the Silver, sorry, Silicon Valley Bank for the bank runs there. And then in March 17th, we talked about the yield curve steepening and also the start of recessions. And then on the March 31st episode 2023, we brought it back to the regional banking stress that we're seeing in the market and how it could be impacting the CR, the commercial real estate market, as well as the CMBS market there. So you and I were talking about this morning, that could be something to continue to watch as those issues that were underlying the regional banks haven't really been cleared as of this point, despite some signaling from the Fed that they might be cutting rates or that they'll be cutting rates in 2024. So that could be something that could creep up again in 2024. So it's we suggested listeners to check that one out if they haven't already. And then episode 132, we recorded that in September 8th, 2023. We talk about stress in the overnight reverse repo market and using that as a potential funding stress indicator. And that was actually came in as a question from one of our listeners that we took up. And then also something that we always keep an eye on here, recession indicators. We provided an update on our toolbox of economic recession indicators, and that was recorded on October 6th. Episode 136. And then finally, on December 1st, episode 143, we talked about financial conditions in the marketplace and how that is something that the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell keep an eye on with regards to how they are looking forward on their monetary policy. So definitely, those are some of the highlights for 2023 worth revisiting if you haven't listened to those already.
Yeah, and even though it feels like the no landing scenario was out there and people were starting to believe it, even more people were starting to believe it, let's say, all of our recession indicators are still pointing that recession on the horizon. So it'll be interesting to see whether those recession indicators work out or whether this time is different.
Yeah, I am most interested in that 3-month 10-year. I just want to take a look at to see how, based on where we started this year and the indication that Mr. Harvey provided.
Yeah, I guess it depends on if you want to look at the 10-year, how it's rallied so much. Certainly a lot of that's off the Fed not raising rates, not maybe they're backing away from their higher for longer, but whether that's a more of an indication of there's problems out there, or really it's just on the Fed rate expectations. But with that, more of our recession indicators, we get a couple good looks at them on the first week of 2024. On Wednesday, we do get the ISM manufacturing for December. That number is estimated to be 47.2, slightly higher than the 46.7 from the prior month, but still below 50, so still contractionary. We do get JOLTS job openings on Wednesday also. That's expected to be 8.85 million versus the 8.73 million prior. Number seems to have been, it's been pretty noisy where you get a pretty big drop. The trend is certainly down, but it seems like every month kind of go two steps forward, one step back there. I would expect that number maybe to be higher than the previous month there. We do get the Fed meeting minutes, so we'll see whether the Fed, we got some conflicting views on whether they were actually talking about rate cuts or not. So we'll see whether they want us to know that they were talking about rate cuts, or whether they want to kind of scrub that thought from the market. Also on Thursday, we do get jobless claims. Those numbers expected to be kind of flat from where they were. And then Friday, it is Pizza Friday. We do get the change in non-farm payrolls. That number is expected to be pretty weak there. A slight cool down, as Eric Dahl put in the notes here. 168,000 is the number, down from 199,000 the previous month. So pretty weak, but still growing. We're still kind of, that's kind of almost like a flat line, a baseline number. The unemployment rate is expected to be 3.8%, up from 3.7%, and labor force participation to be flat. And finally, we do get ISM services also. That number is expected to be a little bit weaker at 52.5 versus 52.7 the prior month, but still expansionary. So that kind of what we've seen with manufacturing contraction, services expansion, looks like it will still continue at least for December.
Yeah, so a lot to look forward to in the first week of 2024. I'm excited to get after it next week, as seeing some people again in the office, as a lot of people have been on vacation there. So I'm excited to go back.
Yep. Well, that should wrap it up again for this week, Sam. Wrap it up for 2023. We put another 50 episodes in the books. This is episode 146. So episode 150 coming up here, I guess, at the end of January.
Yeah, it's already there practically. So I wanted to thank everyone for listening in to us today on Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget, if you can send in your suggestions for topics of the week at email us at minutes@doubleline.com, or you can hit us up on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Our website is doubleline.com. You should go there and sign up for Jeffrey Gundlach's highly anticipated Just Markets webcast that is occurring on January 9th. So you do have some time to sign up. But if you do sign up, you'll get the reminder. So don't forget to do that. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/doubleline capital. And then, Sam, your other podcast, The Sherman Show, you do with Jeff Sherman. Make sure to follow them at Sherman Show Pod. Thanks for tuning in, and hope everyone has a great New Year's weekend.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Good luck out there, and have a safe weekend, and see you in 2024.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of DoubleLine Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.